We're all familiar with the phrase, as it was in the days of Lot. What does that mean? Well, we're going to talk about it today. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative, biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, thanks for joining me today. We're going into more detail with Paul and some of the other things, but we're going to also be talking about the days of Lot. You're listening to Dr. Fred. I'm your host, and we'll be here for the next few minutes with another episode of Study, Grow, Know. You know, if we look at to the saga of Sodom and Gomorrah, we see something that should penetrate our souls. Lot lived in a day and age when blatant homosexuality and all manner of sexual perversion existed. What was previously considered to be abnormal had become normal. The people of Sodom and Gomorrah did not even try to hide it, according to the Bible. I know. Many gay activists have offered all types of explanations for why the twin cities of the plain, Sodom and Gomorrah, were destroyed. And of course, all of their explanations conveniently avoid any discussion of gay intercourse, whether man on man, boy on man, or something else entirely. Now, it's not my goal here to castigate or denigrate homosexuals. I simply want to bring out what I consider to be the facts as noted in God's Word. People are free to disagree with me, and they likely will. Now, a number of things existed during Lot's time in Sodom and Gomorrah, and we glean from the scriptures that even though Lot lived among these people, he himself was not homosexual. We first learn of Lot, for instance, in Genesis 13. He and his uncle Abraham, the very, very founder of the nation of Israel, from which eventually the nation of Israel became, he and his uncle Abram had a problem getting along. So Abraham asked Lot to choose for himself where he would live, and Abraham would go the other way, so there would not be any problems. Lot did so, and the two separated. Now, interestingly enough, by the way, Abraham didn't have to do it that way. He could have just said, okay, I'm taking this, you get the rest. But he allowed Lot to choose, which shows his humility. In Genesis 14, we learn that a number of kings decided to come against the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah and wound up taking Lot captive. Well, Abraham learned of this, and he went after him, ultimately freeing him from his imprisonment. This is also the same chapter where Abraham meets King Melchizedek and ends up giving him a tithe, but that's another story. Segue to Genesis 18, and we learn of a visit of three men to Abraham. Abraham asks them to stop and eat, and during the course of the conversation, he learns that Sodom and Gomorrah are marked for destruction. Abraham goes through his famous, "Will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked?" set of questionings found in Genesis 18:23. And asks the Lord if he would destroy the cities if 50 righteous people were found there. He continues until he reaches the number 10. And the Lord assures Abraham that he would not destroy the two cities if 10 individuals live there, righteous individuals. Now, unfortunately, it becomes clear then that fewer than 10 live there. And Abraham doesn't go any further than the number 10. Now in Genesis 19, we get right back into the thick of it. The two angels who had visited with Abraham, and actually there were three men, the one of them is believed to have been the Lord in his pre-incarnate manifestation. But the two angels continued on to Sodom and Gomorrah, and their job was to get Lot and his family out of those twin cities before Sodom and Gomorrah could be destroyed. That's their job. They are there to not save the city, but to save Lot and his family. The text tells us something about their arrival. Here's what it says in Genesis 19:1, quote, "Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening as Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom." Please note that Lot was among those who sat at the gate. Sitting at the gate in those days meant that he was part of the political process of Sodom. He was a politician in a way. In essence, he was likely a type of judge. When people had difficulties or problems that they could not resolve between themselves, they brought their problems to the men of the gate, and the men judged between parties to determine who was right and what would be done, and their judgments were considered to be final. Now, Lot was, in some sense at least, a politician. This comes up later in the story, too, brought forth by some of the men of Sodom, who obviously did not like what Lot stood for, and they told him so. We'll get to that in a minute. Now, please remember that Lot was involved in some form of leadership, and that he was among those who judged between right and wrong and likely attempted to do what was right by God's standards. Peter tells us that God, quote, rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, 2 Peter 2:7. This is a reference to the angels rescuing Lot from the twin cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, marked for destruction by God because of the sinfulness of those members of those cities. Notice that Peter calls Lot righteous and that he endured the sensual conduct of unprincipled men on a daily basis. Now, as the story unfolds, we discover that the men of the city wanted the two angels to hang out in the town square with them so that they could, quote, know them. Now, of course, gay activists here say that this has nothing to do with sexual proclivities of the townspeople or the townsmen. They just wanted to hang out, get to know them. Not sexually, just kind of get to know them. Well, if that's true, then it absolutely makes no sense that Lot would offer his two virgin daughters to the men in order to keep them from knowing those two angels, Genesis 19:5-8. What is Lot thinking here? If all the men wanted to do is simply to kind of hang out with and get to know the two visitors, why is Lot overreacting to such a degree that he is willing to give the men his two daughters, and he emphasizes the fact that they're virgins? It makes no sense. Now, if the men of the town only wanted to chat and get to know the two angels, there's no reason that Lot would have offered his two virgin daughters to the men of the town to have their way with them. None whatsoever. It makes absolutely no sense, unless, of course, the men of the town wanted a great deal more than to simply chat and have a few drinks with the two angelic visitors. Well, after Lot offers his daughters up, one of the men verbally pounces on Lot, condemning Lot's judgmental attitude. Notice what this man says, quote, "This one came in as an alien, and already he is acting like a judge. Now we will treat you worse than them," Genesis 19:9. Well, the reality is quite clear here. These men did not simply want to talk with the two visitors. They wanted to rape them. And Lot was trying to help them realize how terrible their desires were and was attempting, in albeit a very ineffectual and poor way, to get them to see the light of just how evil they had become by offering to them his virgin daughters. So we see a number of things at play here. First, the men of the town were homosexuals and intended to have their way with the two visiting men. And notice that these angels were seen, obviously, as male. Second, we note that Lot was somehow involved in the political arena of Sodom, doing what he could to keep things from getting worse, I imagine. Third, Lot understood that the evil that was thoroughly prevalent within his society because of the men of Sodom was thoroughly evil indeed, as far as God was concerned. Lot understood that. Now, in America today and in various parts of the world, gay activists are doing all they can to force the world to accept their lifestyle as normal, whether we want to do so or not. They're working at it from two fronts. First, they want same-sex marriage to be seen as normal as heterosexual marriage. Second, they want to make any dissension to be viewed as hate crime, hate speech. They know that not everyone is going to come on board with them, so to keep people from sounding off about it, they hope to be able to one day use the law to shut people up. These laws currently exist, by the way, in Canada and other places like the United Kingdom. And activists point to them as an example of what should also exist in the United States. Now, by attempting to normalize gay intercourse, same-sex unions, or what have you, whatever you like to call them, they hope to turn things upside down. They are trying to change psychology, theology, and ultimately society so that no one will be able to work to save anyone out of the gay lifestyle. They want all the doors tightly shut by forcing people to recognize as truth the lie that homosexuals are born that way, not created by circumstances. And if a person is born that way, then there's no change or no way to change them. So to try to change a person who was born a certain way should be seen as a crime, in spite of the fact that science has never shown us where the gay gene is. They've not proven any way, shape, or form how a person is born as a homosexual. Now, someone could say, well, they just haven't discovered it yet. That's true. They haven't discovered it yet. And in all likelihood, they won't. Now, in California, where we lived for 25 years, there is now legislation that if adopted will make it impossible and even against the law for therapists to try to help homosexuals come out of the gay lifestyle, in spite of the fact that thousands upon thousands of gays and lesbians have come out of that lifestyle throughout the world. Gay activists being pushed by Satan and his minions are doing everything they can to change society so that the world will be forced to accept homosexuality and homosexuals as normal, whether anyone agrees with it or not. Being political about it won't help either. You know, in California, Prop 8 came under severe fire for attempting to define marriage as between one man and one woman. On two separate occasions, people went to the polls and they voted to support the idea that same-sex unions were unconstitutional. Even though this was all done within the confines of the law, gay activists were not happy because they did not get their intended result. So they fought with everything they had to overturn what the majority of people in California believed to be right. Gay activist judges sided with the gay agenda, and homosexuals won the day. Prop 8 in California was completely overturned. Recently, North Carolina went through the same thing and made it law that marriage is between one man and one woman. Gay activists learned a great deal from California, and I cannot imagine that they will leave North Carolina alone without a fight. There will be a large fight, and ultimately, may be that gay activists will win again in North Carolina against the majority of people and what they have to say. So is it wrong to be involved in politics? And we addressed this briefly last time. Not necessarily, because as Christians and legal citizens of this country, we have a right to vote and to be involved in the political process in the United States. The only problem I see is that if we are only involved politically in attempting to change things, we can easily begin to see gays and gay activists as opponents, as the enemy, or as people we are in a battle against, instead of seeing them as people who need Jesus and his salvation. When that happens, it becomes problematic, because as Paul tells us, our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against powerful spiritual forces in the heavenly realms, Ephesians 6:12. At that point, we have lost sight of the reality of the true, actual battle. Politics and political aspirations can only accomplish so much. We may feel that if we win, we have won a victory for truth, but in the end, what of the homosexual who desperately needs Jesus? If we believe that we must, through the political process, do what is right and stand up against the things we believe are unscriptural, it can become easy to lose sight of the fact that many who stand on the other side of the political fence opposite us need salvation. You know, Lot was involved in the politics of Sodom. He was a judge who tried to do what was right. And I'm guessing and hoping it was by God's standards. Otherwise, Peter would not have referred to him as righteous. And he could only do so much. In the end, both Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed because of the heinousness of their sin and their crimes against humanity, not to mention the fact that the stench of their sin had reached God's nostrils. Well, we are seeing a rebirth of the Sodom and Gomorrah attitude today. And we need to pray against it, but we also need to remember that the people involved in that attitude need Jesus Christ. That's our show for today. I thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for being here. And until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.